and Gunnar Sheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, to get ready for Friday, I've already got my blue shirt picked out so I can be ready for Go Blue Day. And that is a day that we need to take note of if we're going to make a difference in preventing child abuse in our state. And here to tell us about Go Blue Day and some of the other activities that are coming up in the month of April, we have Ricky Dubois. She's a prevention specialist with the Safe Child Advocacy Center. And also with the center, we have Clara Norman. She is a victim services advocate. And the Safe Child Advocacy Center is one of the many, many programs under the umbrella of Catholic Community Service, one of the many things that they do. So I thought maybe we would start off, Ricky, with you telling us about what Go Blue Day is all about. Is this just an Alaska thing?
It's not just an Alaska thing, but it's something that Alaska is definitely participating in. Prevent Child Abuse America is the national organization focused on the prevention of abuse and neglect of children. And the state chapter for Alaska is through Alaska Children's Trust. So we've joined in partnership with them to celebrate wearing blue on Friday, April 1st, to acknowledge it and give the awareness out there.
So this sounds like this is a community event, that there's more going on than just wearing a blue shirt this Friday. Can you tell us about some of the other aspects of this?
Absolutely. We are partnering with The Grind here in Juneau. They will be wearing campaign t-shirts that we've designed. Our slogan this year is Every Child Safe. It shouldn't hurt to be a child. So they will wear those shirts for us on Friday as they're handing out copies to the community. Just getting the awareness out there as much as we can on Go Blue Day.
So I want to turn to Claire right now because she is a victim services advocate. And so she talks to many of the children, hears their stories. I guess it's hard to realize that so many children go through childhood hurting.
Absolutely. So I am a forensic interviewer and family advocate at the Child Advocacy Center here in Juneau. So I am one of the people that get to talk to children when they come to the center. I also am the backup family advocate, so I help the family through the process if it goes to court or whatever the family needs after they leave the center.
Is it hard to hear these stories, so, you know, as part of your job?
Absolutely. It's definitely difficult to hear the things that children do disclose that have gone on in their lives, but I find it very rewarding to be someone that can support that child and be an ear to listen to things that they have gone through. So it's very valuable work that we do at the center.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the work that the Safe Child Advocacy Center does? Because it sounds like it's an organization with a lot of arms and legs to it.
Absolutely. The Safe CAC is a child-focused facility where we have a multidisciplinary team. We refer to it as an MDT. It has community professionals that we all work together to advocate for prevention, safety, and well-being and of healing abused children. The MDT is composed of members of the Juneau Police, Alaska State Troopers, Division of Juvenile Justice, Prosecution, the Office of Children's Services, AWARE, Central Council, Tlingit and Haida, Indian Tribes of Alaska, Juneau School District, and local medical and mental health professionals. So we work as a team and come together to help children and families that come through the Child Advocacy Center here in Juneau and outlying Southeast communities as well.
So basically, you have widened the safety net for children by having so many partners. But years ago, this didn't happen, that a lot of agencies kind of operated in a vacuum. What kind of benefits are you seeing by working together as a team?
The child advocacy model is to limit how many times a child and family has to talk to different people. So when the family comes through the center and having all these different partners come together, it really helps walk the family through together so they're not having to go through the same experience multiple different times with multiple different agencies. So it's better on our part when we can all come together to help focus on supporting the child and the family.
Have you noticed that when you do have intervention earlier, when the child and the family get support sooner, a big difference in kind of the outcome of how their life progresses?
Absolutely. I think it's always helpful when we can come together to focus for the family. And I think the family can realize the benefits that having a team approach to things can help as well.
So perhaps one of you could give us a perspective on how big the problem is. I mean, we always hear the statistics that Alaska has one of the worst rates of child abuse in the nation. But, I mean, how many children do you think in a year suffer abuse?
I don't have that specific number, unfortunately, right in front of me. But it's fair to say that in Alaska, the rates run between about 60 to 70% of disproportionality rates of Alaska Native children or those of minorities being represented in the child protective system. So reports coming in are at a higher rate for those who are of Alaska Native or minority descent, and the involvement of the agency is at an increased level as well.
So how important is the community in this equation?
Community is hugely important. Children rely on adults to protect them, and adults can only protect children when they're aware of the problem. As we know, awareness precedes change. So one of the biggest efforts we have is to increase the awareness of the general public about the prevalence of child abuse, what children are experiencing, and how individuals can become more involved in the protection of children. So that's one of our goals with the prevention work now at CAC.
I think years ago, there wasn't a lot of research. It was just beginning to emerge about some of the toll that it takes on a person's whole life to experience abuse.
Yes. I mean, there's a study done, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, which was done by an insurance company, actually, Kaiser Permanente. They surveyed thousands of people over a course of many years and determined there were 10 factors that if children experience them, they have an increased likelihood of suffering from mental health, physical health, and behavioral health issues as they go on into life. They have a greater likelihood of heart disease, you know, depression, anxiety, suicide, several really pretty significant outcomes of that. But recent research is showing that while children do experience adverse childhood experiences, that the balance of that positive childhood experiences help balance and negate the negative experience that child abuse can have. So while kids can go through a difficult experience, if they have caring parents, if they have, you know, relatives who are supportive of them, if they have positive connections with teachers and other adults in their lives who are engaging in positive experiences, that can really mitigate the effects that abuse and neglect have on children's development.
So Claire, have you seen that in working with children? Can you maybe give me, without violating confidentiality, give me a sense of how help kind of help someone heal?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Ricky's new prevention education job is really going to help families, because one of the things that she's going to be doing after the child comes to the center is follow up advocacy with the children and families too. And she can help support the family, getting them connected to resources. That's one thing in my job that I don't always get to see, because usually I'm the one talking with the kids and the family at the center, and that's kind of where my role stops. And so we're really excited to have Ricky here now to be able to work with the family and provide follow-up advocacy with them to provide support in their life to help their future and get back on track and healing and all of that.
Well, I hear often in Alaska that a lot of the trauma is intergenerational. So really, I would imagine that if you're just dealing with a child, that you're probably not going to sort of deal with the whole situation.
That's right. So we have to work with parents and we work with children, because we're working with parents to correct challenges that are occurring now, and we're working with children to break cycles of abuse and neglect. Children often model what their parents have taught them. So if they grow up in an abusive environment, chances are they're not going to know much different than that. So we're really working to establish safe, healthy, nurturing environments for children to be raised up in, working with parents to build up their own resilience. Because as we know, especially going through recently, going through the pandemic, parents who are under stressors have a greater likelihood of having difficulty managing those challenges. And if they can increase their resilience to manage the things that come at them, they have a better ability to focus on and meet their kids' needs. And the greatest predictor of children healing from child abuse is having a caring and supportive adult in their life. So if we can support parents to support children, then we help children on that healing path.
So yes, it's kind of like you can't really have one without the other. It makes total sense. But a lot of times I wonder, do people who have had intergenerational abuse, do they really know or grasp how the abuse has affected them? And is that also a part of the teaching process?
Absolutely, that's a part of the process. Oftentimes parents don't realize that because it was normal for them. They are continuing a pattern and a cycle of behavior that is normalized to them and not necessarily demonstrated as problematic. They might see themselves as they're maintaining a job and they're caring for their children. And so they might look at it and say, everything is okay. And our goal is to help reinforce the strengths that are already in existence for those parents and help highlight where we could put in some more resources and supports for those areas where they need more support.
So any activities this month that will highlight some of these issues?
Yes. Friday is Go Blue Day, so members of the community, if they are so inclined, they can dress in blue. The goals are make blue food, engage in a positive activity with a child, you know, supporting basically anything that really gets awareness about child abuse out there. Also this month, on Friday, April 8th at noon, and on April 24th, it's a Sunday at 7 p.m., I will be partnering with the Alaska Children's Trust to deliver a live presentation on child sexual abuse prevention. These webinars are geared toward parents and about how they can protect their children and other children. And you can visit alaskachildrenstrust.org to register for those events. There will be opportunity for question and answer for folks who have additional questions about prevention. And we have a lot more coming out this month on our social media. Safe Child Advocacy Center on Instagram and Facebook will be posting material and information about prevention and about the efforts that the community can engage in to support the effort.
Okay. Well, I thank you both, Ricky Dubois, a prevention specialist, and Claire Norman, a victim services advocate at the Safe Child Advocacy Center, one of the many programs under Catholic Community Service. And I hope that we see a sea of blue this Friday, because it is such an important message, and hope that it can translate into some actions. Thank you so much, the two of you, for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.